I think we'll just go ahead and jump into it. And so Leviticus today, Leviticus chapter 25, if you're grabbing a pew Bible, page 89. Before we get to that, from the poet Alta Boudreaux, she writes, "Eyelids part, readjusting from dark hibernation, sleep peaceful, warm. Silence sings the extravagance of a new morning, a new day, a fresh start. Dewy are the leaves and the grass, barefoot, sunrise, sunshine, warm against tender, sun-kissed skin. Brilliant is the morn, the awake. Breeze ruffles hair as dresses swing. Birds sing, gliding. Rejoice in the brilliance, the jubilee of the day." And with that, Boudreaux really kind of captures what is at the heart of Parsha Bahar today, what is now the 32nd of the 54 Parshiot, as we continue working our way through the Jesus backstory. Parsha Bahar really inviting us, as the poem reads, to a new day. A fresh start. Hi. Good to see you this morning, honey. Hit the pause button just for a moment. Good morning, good morning. Out there. Hi, honey. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Thank you. Ava Joy's going to be with the kids. Hi, honey. Yeah. Hi, honey. Do you want a quick... Okay. Hold on. The Jubilee of the Day. The Parsha Bahar, it does invite us, as the poem says, right, to a new day, a fresh start, the welcome of a grandchild, right, to rejoice at the brilliance of what is this Jubilee. And it's just that, right, the Jubilee that is really at the heart and center of not only Parsha Bahar, but also, as we'll see, the life and the teachings of Jesus, and then consequently, comes to you and me as followers of Jesus, right? For us to live this Jubilee. Noting Parsha Bahar, it gathers up Leviticus chapters 25 and just the first two verses of 26, so 26, 1 and 2, which seems a bit maybe odd or strange. It begins here at 25 and 1, again, page 89 in your pew Bible, 25 and 1. It begins with that all too familiar now, Vayedaber Adonai El Moshe, translates, and Yahweh, or and the Lord, said to Moses. And then we get the Parsha here, Bahar Sinai, meaning on or in or by Mount Sinai, Lamor, saying. And then from there, we get these instructions. We get some instruction regarding what is to be a Sabbath for the land. We pick this up in 25 and verse 2. When you enter the land I am going to give you, the land itself must observe a Sabbath to the Lord. For 6 years, sow your fields, and for 6 years, prune your vineyards and gather their crops. But, verse 4, in the seventh year, the land is to have a year of Sabbath rest, a Sabbath to the Lord. And so, in essence, plant and harvest for 6 years, fantastic. On that seventh year, it is to be, it says, a Sabbath. And then from there, the rest of this chapter is all about the Jubilee. What is Yovel in Hebrew? Here referring to kind of what is a Sabbath of Sabbaths. 25 and 8, it says, count off seven Sabbath years, seven times 7 years, so that the seven Sabbath years amount to a period of 49 years. Then have the trumpet sounded everywhere on the 10th day of the seventh month, on what is the Day of Atonement. And you might remember, this was a number of weeks ago, Yom Kippur, either way is fine. It's the Day of Atonement. It's about purification. It's about the repairing of our broken relationship with God. And if you're interested, Yom Kippur actually starts this evening and goes tomorrow. And it's on that day, we read, sound the trumpet throughout your land, consecrate the 50th year, and proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be, it says, a jubilee for you, a yovel. And then what we want to get is at the heart of this yovel, the rest of chapter 25, it's about the land being returned. It's about debt being forgiven. It's about slaves being freed. Now, interesting, if you're anything like me, and I always say, I hope you're not, for your sake, but if you're anything like me, when you think of Jubilee, I think of joy and happiness, right? This rejoicing and its celebration, and that makes sense because from the Latin, it means to shout for joy. And yet, if we go underneath to this Hebrew, yovel is kind of a neutral word. It literally means a ram's horn trumpet. And so we can think of a shofar. It was used or blown to gather, to assemble the people. It was used as a battle cry. And so there is this element of joy. That's fine, right? Rejoice in the brilliance of all of this. But even more, this is a call to action, right? This is a call to action to return the land, to forgive the debt, to free the slave, in effect, taking action against all of the inequality and the injustice. In effect, it's a pushing back against all the greed and the power and the control. It's kind of hitting the reset on the social and economic structure. From the theologian C.B. Samuel, he says, Jubilee operated as a corrective because people were tight-fisted and hard-hearted. What's interesting then is into all of that sort of greed and power and control, into all of that tight-fisted and hard-hearted, right? We find the backstory that is the Jubilee then flowing into and through the life of Jesus. And so if you have your Bibles, you can turn to Luke 4. Again, if you're grabbing a pew Bible, page 727. Right, we see this idea of Jubilee flowing then in and through the life of Jesus, and Jesus makes it very explicit. In fact, it's the very first act of his public ministry. We read of this in kind of what is his inaugural address. From Luke 4 and 16, it's here we read, he, Jesus, went to Nazareth, where he had been brought up. And so, I think Jesus, born in Bethlehem, raised in Nazareth, and now he's up north in the region of Galilee. And on the Sabbath day, he went into the synagogue as was his custom. And again, that's what Jesus did, right? On the Sabbath, he was worshiping. He was with the community. He stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Interesting. And so here is some 2,000 years ago. They're up north, this town of Nazareth. At that time, it would have been about 20,000 inhabitants, a small town. Half, a third of the size of Tigard. It's the Sabbath, and so many have come to the synagogue, like you have come here this morning. The service that begins with prayers. We had some time of prayer. And then we read that Jesus, he takes the scroll and he reads, saying, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Interesting, all of this is language straight out of Parsha Bahar. All this is, it's all this kind of Jubilee sort of language. In fact, the year of the Lord's favor translates as the Jubilee. The year of the Lord's favor is the Jubilee. Now, what is interesting here is that the greater scholarship believes that what Jesus read here on this particular morning was not part of what is called the Haftarah. You can say Haftorah, you can say Haftarah. Noting that each Parsha, each weekly Parsha, and I was wondering when I was going to share this, but each weekly Parsha is paired with a passage from the prophets. And so in the same way that there's 54 parshiot that are read weekly throughout the Jewish year, right? Each one of those parshiot, each one of those parshas is accompanied by a, what is a haftarah, what is a reading from one of the prophets. Point being to all of that, according to scholarship, this Isaiah passage was not part of what would have been the Haftarah for the reading that day. In fact, Parsha Bahar, the Haftarah comes from the prophet Jeremiah. And so, in effect, Jesus is doing something here that wasn't done. In effect, we could say he goes to the heart of Parsha Bahar. He goes to the heart of the Jubilee. He goes to the heart of return the land and debt forgiven and freeing the slaves. He pushes back, we could say, against all of the injustice and the inequality. Right, to quote from Samuel, he is operating as a corrective to all of the tight-fisted and the hard-hearted. And then verse 20 says, he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him, perhaps in part because he wasn't reading the prescribed Haftarah for that morning. He began by saying to them, "Today this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." Noting again, this was his first public act of ministry. This was Jesus giving his inaugural address. This was Jesus giving his foundational declaration. What is, in a word, we could say, the announcement of his mission. And consequently, then, as his followers, it is your mission and it is my mission. Right? In effect, to live the Jubilee, to live the heart of the Jubilee, right? Joyful? Absolutely. Let's be joyful. But even more as a call to action. As a call to action, Ed Stetzer, the director of Lifeway Research, he, I think, captures the heart of this. He writes, God is on a mission. Right? Meaning God has a plan. God has a purpose. God is up to something in the world. And Jesus, he says, is the embodiment, right? The personification, the illustration, the expression of that mission. Right? Jesus is the embodiment of that mission. He goes on, the church, right? Meaning you and me, not this building, not the institution, but you and me, the people, the community, the gathering, the assembly. The shofar has called us together, called us to action. The church is also sent on mission by Jesus. It's not that the church has a mission, but rather the mission. Right in here, we can think again, Parsha Bahar. Or we can think Jubilee. We can think Isaiah 61, right? But rather the mission has a church. Tim Stafford, author of the book titled Surprised by Jesus, he writes, as a result of seeing Jesus more clearly, and he's referring here actually to some of the Old Testament prophetic, some of the Old Testament prophets, and particularly here Isaiah. As a result of seeing Jesus more clearly, as a result of seeing him more clearly, I see my life and human life as deeper and grander. I see myself not as an isolated individual, but rather I see myself bound into his family. And maybe we can even think back to Exodus and Parsha Shmot, right? Where he looks up at the sky and the stars, right? The stars are numbered and he calls them by name, right? Meaning you matter. Everybody matters, right? You matter. Right, we're bound together as a family. I see myself not as an isolated individual, but rather I see myself bound into his family, joining in his astonishing flesh and blood mission. Right, again, God's purpose, God's plan, and what is that? To redeem the cosmos. And it looks like land is returned. It looks like debt is forgiven. It looks like slaves are freed. It looks like injustice and inequality are turned right side up. It looks like good news to the poor. It looks like freedom for the captive, sight for the blind. It looks like liberation for the oppressed. Keeping in mind here, I think often we have this backwards, and I'm guilty of this. That how often I ask God to join me in my mission, Right? How often do I ask God to join me, right? To bless my plans, to God bless my dreams, my hopes. And yet the order of things goes the other way. Right? The invitation is for me, for my life, to join God in His mission. Right? And so maybe the deep reality here is not so much may God bless my life, may God bless your life, but maybe it's may my life, may your life bless God. Right? Instead of waking up in the morning and asking God, God, bless this day, bless me, bless my plans, my hopes, my dreams. Maybe I get up and I say, God, may my life today, may my activity today, may my thoughts, my words, my activity, may it bless you. May it bless your mission. Now, we could dive into this a little bit more this morning. We could dig into some of the Hebrew. We could kind of parse all of that out. But I kind of think the answer isn't really so much found in what we might call linguistical study, looking at structure and form. But I think it's really found in the heart. I think we see it really in the heart of God. And so, yes, we could parse it out, right, and consider, or we can simply look at the life of Jesus, right? Jesus, who is the embodiment of God's mission. Jesus, who is the jubilee of the day, right? Who is the jubilee of every day, who is the jubilee of this day. And we see that expressed, right, in how He cared for the widow. How He touched the leper, how He fed the multitudes, how He gave sight to the blind. We see it in how He welcomed the foreigner, the outsider. We see it in how He talked about greatness and He took a child in His arms. We see it in how He demonstrated greatness, right? He washed another's feet. We see it in how He served and in how He sacrificed and how He suffered. We see it in how He taught us that the sum of all the law, the sum of it all is love. And so with that, then we go, right? We go, by way of example, we go to the single mom. Doesn't know how she's going to feed her kids, and we show up on her doorstep, offering the love of Jesus as it's found in a gallon of milk and a loaf of bread. We embrace maybe the teenager who is being bullied, right? We befriend this young boy, this young woman, right? Offering a heart of compassion and understanding. Maybe it's we serve an elderly man whose Social Security isn't meeting it anymore. Right, Social Security, it's becoming less and less, and so we step in and we help fill in that gap. Right, because it's not that the church has a mission, it's that the mission has a church. May we be that church. May we be that people. And so in a sense, this morning is, we sit in as we reflect a little, it's kind of a chance to kind of hit that reset button. Right? To kind of think about this jubilee is this moment. In fact, the Day of Atonement was this moment when it's kind of a reset. And with that, then maybe we can ask, are we, you and me, are we living into this mission of God? Are we living into this mission of God? And we can think here of Parsha Bahar, right? And the Jubilee. Right? And we could dig into that a little bit and kind of ask, I don't know what land, what that might look like, what possession you might have, but what do you have that needs to be returned? Right? What debt is there that needs to be forgiven? Right? Who am I holding captive that I need to release? Are we living into this mission of God? Is our community life together shaped by the mission of God? And here we can think, you know, our time, our energy, our efforts, our finances, our agendas, right? Is our community life together, is it shaped by this mission of God? Are we investing in bringing Jubilee to bear in our world? Are we investing in bringing Jubilee? And we can think here of the hungry, the dirty, the tired, the lost, the lonely, the hurting, the abused, the outsider, the cast aside, right? The single mom, the desperate teen, the elderly man. Are we investing in bringing Jubilee to bear in our world? And then maybe to get a little bit more personal, we can think of greed and power and control. We can think of tight-fisted and hard-hearted. I'm pretty sure it wasn't just for that day, but it's for me here today. And so I ask you, I ask myself, right? Am I surrendering myself to the mission of God? Am I surrendering myself to the mission of God? In other words, am I letting go of my greed? Am I letting go of my power? Am I letting go of control? Am I open-handed? Am I letting go? Am I opening my hand and softening my heart? Am I opening my hand and softening my heart? Remembering it's not that the church has a mission, but it is that the mission has a church. Vayidaber Adonai el Moshe Bahar Sinai Lamor, said Yahweh to Moses on Mount Sinai, saying,